Welcome, everyone, to the Predictably Treacherous podcast. Today's episode is The Day of the Triffids, which was a John Wyndham novel published in 1951. So in today's episode, we're going to look at, talk a little bit about John Wyndham, like his life, his biography. And then we'll look at The Day of the Triffids, talk a bit about the plot, the plot summary, and some of my thoughts on the novel. And then we'll look at some of the television and film adaptations of the novel. So there was actually a movie, The Day of the Triffids, from 1962. And then there is a BBC television adaptation from 1981. And then there is a BBC television adaptation again in 2009, I believe. And then there is a, the movie, the Danny Boyle film, 28 Days Later. It's not an adaptation of it, but I guess it was inspired by Day of the Triffids. At least the beginning was. I think the screenwriter for it, I'll check the name there. The screenwriter, though, he indicated that the Day of the Triffids was a big inspiration for him. And that can be seen kind of early on in the film. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. So John Wyndham was born in 1903 in England, I guess Warwickshire. Now, he wrote some novels earlier on in his career prior to World War II under various pen names, or I don't know, they were pen names, or he published them under different names anyway. But he had little success. He did go to war. He was in World War II. I guess he was in the shit, too, it sounds like. And then when he came back home, he changed his writing style, although I'm getting a lot of this from Wikipedia. He changed his writing style in some way, and I guess that led to better success. So the first novel that he published after World War II in 1951 was The Day of the Triffids. And that was actually published under the name John Wyndham. That's the first thing he published under that name. And he had a lot of success with that book. He then went on to have quite a bit of success with the next few books that he wrote. The Kraken Wakes in 1953. The Chrysalids in 1955. I remember that from school. I didn't actually read it, but I know a lot of people in other classes did have to read that. And The Mildwitch Cuckoos, 1957. I guess that is been adapted as The Village of the Damned, I think a couple times. So today we're going to be looking at The Day of the Triffids. I'll talk about the plot, give kind of a plot summary of the novel. And then we'll talk a little bit about the 1962 film adaptation and the 1981 BBC television miniseries adaptation, and then the BBC 2009 miniseries adaptation. And then I'm going to talk just briefly about Danny Boyle's 2003, I think it was 2003 film, 28 Days Later, which is not an adaptation of the novel, but the screenwriter, and I'm blanking on the name right now, I'll check it later. The screenwriter said that The Day of the Triffids, I believe, was a big inspiration for him for writing the screenplay for 28 Days Later. So let's get to it. Okay, so The Day of the Triffids, 1951 by John Wyndham. So this is my kind of plot summary. I'm just going to spitball a bit here. We'll just go over it. So the main character is a guy named Bill Mason, and he's a biologist who actually works in a triffid orchard. So triffids are cultivated by corporations for their oil, which is a viable alternative for crude oil. So Bill has had a lifelong fascination with the walking carnivorous plants that may have been created in the novel, it indicates, they may have been created in a Russian lab. And he's had this fascination since his childhood when he was stung by a triffid in his garden, but survived. So the story begins with Bill in a hospital, and he has bandaged eyes. I guess he was recently on the job. He was stung by a triffid. Now, in the hospital, before he has his bandages removed, there is a once-in-a-lifetime, apparently, meteor shower that's going to be taking place, and apparently you'll be able to see it from all over the world. So Bill's kind of upset about that because he wants to see it because he's a sciencey kind of guy. So the next morning, Bill wakes up in his hotel bed, but no medical staff show up for the scheduled removal of his bandages. So after some time and some hemming and hawing, Bill removes the bandages himself, and he discovers that everyone in the hospital is blind. Bill makes his way into the city, which I guess is London, and he comes to realize that almost everywhere, everyone is blind. And there is chaos, and it's only going to get worse as people die and disease spreads, etc. So he meets a sighted woman named Josella Platon. And she is, she's actually being, kidnapped. She's being led around by a blind guy, like forcibly against her will. He has himself chained to her. But Bill frees her, and then together they gather some supplies and they find an apartment to stay in for the night. So the next day, Bill and Josella discover a group of sighted and unsighted people led by a man named Beadley. So they plan on, Beadley and his group, they plan on leaving for the country and starting a colony. Now, Bill and Josella think about it and they decide they're going to join them and they're going to leave. But before they leave, they're separated from each other when they're kidnapped by a man named Coker. And each of them are forced to lead groups of blind people to, you know, help them manage in this situation. So help them get food and get housing and take care of them, kind of stuff like that. So when, after a few days, most of Bill's group of blind men and women begin dying from some kind of illness. So the group he's in kind of disbands. So Bill kind of gets out of there. And he goes back to the place where Beadley and his group are going to be leaving. Now, they're all long gone, but he sees Coker there. Coker's the one who kidnapped him, and Coker's repentant. He says it was a mistake, and he was foolish about it, and Bill kind of, like, lets it go, and Bill and Coker together, they leave for the country. So I think they're pursuing Beadley's party. I can't remember exactly. But they go out to the country together. Now, at some point after being in the country, Bill and Coker go their separate ways. Coker returns to a settlement that they initially found when they went out in the country to help try and improve it. And Bill wants to go on and continue to look for Josella, which is the reason why he went out in the country in the first place. So along his way, Bill's alone now, looking for Josella, and he finds a young girl named Susan. She's all alone. She was with her little brother, but he got stung by a triffid and he's dead, and her parents are long dead. And she can see the little girl, Susan. So Susan and Bill team up, and they continue on looking for Josella, and Bill has an epiphany. He remembers Josella saying that she told him on the one night they were together that there was a house in the country, and she kind of described where it was. So Bill says, well, we got to go looking for that. And so eventually they do find that. So Bill and Susan find Josella, and she's actually living in this house that she was describing. But it's in the country with a couple of her friends. I think a couple and then one other woman. And they are all blind, I believe. It's just Josella who can see, I think. So anyways, it's implied that they have a nice life. Everything's working out at the at this house together, and they've kind of rebuilt, but it's been a bit of a struggle because the Triffids are growing in number, and they're coming up on the house every day. So Bill and Josella and Susan the kid have been working on building a fence around the house, and Bill has electrified it, I think, and they have flamethrowers and etc. But every day there's more and more Triffids, so it's a bit of a struggle. So several years have passed at this point, and it seems like you know, they're doing okay, but they're not going to be able to hold off the onslaught of the Triffids forever. And they actually make contact with a representative who lands a helicopter in their yard. And the representative is from Beedley's colony. So Beedley's colony did survive. And they agree to move to Beedley's colony after the summer is over. They're going to spend the last summer there. I'm not sure why. But before summer comes to an end, they're visited by an armed representative of another militaristic colony. And they're told they will be assigned a contingent of blind that will serve as farmhands in their fiefdom. And they will be essentially slave owners. So Bill and the others don't like this, but they fake interest in it. Like, yeah, it sounds great. Let's do that. Hey, by the way, let's have a bunch of drinks tonight and get hammered. So what they do is they get the representatives, the militaristic guys, they get them drunk. And then they end up sabotaging their armored vehicle, like they put honey in the gas tank or something. And then they all split during the night. And when they're leaving, they smash the fence so all the Triffids get in. And all the Triffids presumably go in and they surround the guys and kill them. So that was how they escaped. And they escaped to the colony with Beedley and his group. And that is the end of the novel. So the novel was really good, really enjoyable. I'm just going to take a look now. I think it was about 225 pages or so. So it's good. It's a very quick read. It's probably safe for a younger audience too. I thought I might actually read it to my son, who's 8 years old. So it's not too scary, I don't think, for him. Here's a couple of thoughts that I had about social commentary in the novel. So it seems to me that John Wyndham, the author, was making a comment that man's greed would lead him to use technology to conquer nature, and this would eventually lead to his destruction. So in the beginning, Bill works for a corporation that, and he works on a Triffid orchard, and they're actually breeding Triffids to get the oil from them as an alternative to fossil fuel oil, right? To crude oil. So obviously corporate greed has caused them to breed these carnivorous plants because even though it's super dangerous, like they eat people and they sting them with poisonous things. But, you know, corporation, their greed has led to this. And now with the meteor shower and everyone going blind, man set up his own destruction. So seems like a good comment on how capitalism and corporate greed leads to, I guess, technology and your own destruction. That's one thing. Now, Bill also says in the book that the meteor shower that blinded everyone may have actually been satellite-based weapons that went off by accident. I thought that was sort of interesting. Also, the Triffids were thought to have been invented by the Soviets for some nefarious purpose, and they actually escaped into the wild. So there's lots of interesting stuff here. He seems to have a real bent on the idea that governments are like geopolitical adversaries and they're trying to manipulate nature, and that eventually the technology and the adversarial nature of these world nations was going to lead to our destruction. Like, he's like, yeah, well, the West and then the Soviets, and we're against each other and they're trying to get an advantage. And the Soviets like creating a man-eating plant and it gets out of control and then it kills everybody. Like, so sort of an interesting commentary. One of the other interesting, if notable, things about the novel was that one of the characters, I think it was on Beedley's colony. It was the guy. It may have been the guy who landed on the helicopter to meet them, and he's from Beedley's colony, the representative. I think he may have indicated that we're not trying to rebuild society. We're trying to create something new and better. This was sort of interesting that I think he was talking about a more anarchal society. He didn't get into details about it, but I just got that idea that he was like, he didn't want to create the same patriarchal, hierarchical, authoritarian type society. They wanted to create like a more, I don't know, egalitarian society, but also a more flattened hierarchy. So, and this, in contrast, the more militaristic representative that came to see them, it was totally totalitarian, right? They were very authoritarian in how they wanted to assign you slaves. So they had a real class division. They had slaves. They had the slave owners who were the people who were cited, and presumably there was layers above them, like the military layer and then the leadership layer. So they had a very hierarchical colony that they were trying to establish, and it was very authoritarian. And it does sort of make sense that Windham would have what would appeal to him would be a more flattened hierarchical society, a more leftist society, because what it indicates on his Wikipedia page here is that he spent some time in his early career in a place called the Pen Club in London, and I'm going to read from Wikipedia here, which had been opened in 1920 by the remaining members of the Friends Ambulance Unit, and which had been partly funded by the Quakers. The intellectual and political mix of pacifists, socialists, and communists continued to inform his views on social engineering and feminism. Whilst there, he met his future wife, Grace Wilson, a teacher. They embarked on a long-term love affair, but did not marry, partly because of the marriage bar. Anyway, so it's interesting that he spent time living amongst a lot of leftists, as it said, and socialist, communist, things like that, anarchists presumably. So it's not surprising that one of the groups in the colonies in the novel would want to create that sort of society, and he contrasted that to the evil totalitarian society that the militaristic one. That was very interesting. Okay, so let's look at the Day of the Triffids film. So it was released in July 1962 in the UK and April 1963 in the US. Runtime was 93 minutes. Directed by Steve Sicchelli, whatever. Starring Howard Keel and a bunch of other people. Let's go into the plot summary of the movie. As with many film adaptations, it was not exactly like the book. They skipped some things out entirely. They created some new characters. They combined some things. They portrayed some ideas from the book through scenes that didn't exist in the novel, which that's okay. I mean, you got to do stuff like that. I mean, the novel's 225 pages. You're not going to turn that into a movie or a screenplay. So I'm okay with that. One thing at the beginning, they make Bill Mason an American Merchant Navy officer. And at first, he's kind of obnoxious. Let's listen to this clip.
We have not heard from our correspondent in South Africa. Reports are the same. The show of meteorites continues unabated. This is a thrilling, once-in-a-lifetime spectacle that simply must be seen.
Once-in-a-lifetime spectacle. Free tickets. Take any seat in the house. Here I am.
Here's Dr. Soames to see you, Mr. Mason. Hmm.
Look, Doctor, why can't I take a look at what's going on outside? You're going to take the bandages off in the morning anyway.
I'm afraid not, Mr. Mason. After an eye operation such as yours, it's best to wait the full 10 days. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, Nurse Jefferson.
Yes, Doctor. 8 o'clock.
Well, have a good night, Mr. Mason.
Thank you. See you in the morning, I hope.
I hope so.
Miss Jameson, are you really as pretty as they say you are?
By tomorrow morning, you'll be able to answer that question for yourself.
Tomorrow morning. Do you really think I'll be able to see?
By tomorrow night, you'll be in Southampton, on board your ship, and ready for duty.
Aye, aye, ma'am.
Good night.
Good night.
Yeah, I feel like this gets done a lot in movies. The American person gets a bad rap. You know, they too frequently get portrayed unfairly in films as loud, aggressive, obnoxious, overconfident. And I guess in film format, it's sort of better because it suits the character to be like this, because you have to move the action forward. I mean, you only really have an hour and a half to get things done in the movie. You can't have the character move really slowly like you could in a novel. Or I guess you could, but I just mean it's probably easier to have the character be obnoxious and aggressive and move things forward quickly. For example, in the book, in the hospital, Bill hems and haws over whether he should take his bandages off himself or wait for staff to return to do it. They actually spend like pages and pages on this in the novel. But in the movie, Bill wakes at 9 a.m. after oversleeping and immediately angrily calls down for the nurse. And then within a minute, he takes the bandages off himself. So you can see how being loud and obnoxious and forthright, it suits the movie format a little bit better. But I do want to say that I think Americans do get a bad rap for this. I mean, they're portrayed this way all the time in the movies, and that's just not the case. It's a good stereotype, but it's a little bit off. Now, I will say, though, this character, although he appears like this early in the movie, and I was like, oh my God, it's not going to be like this all movie, is it? He's not like this at all for the rest of the movie. He seems, for the rest of the movie, he just completely changes. He's still confident and he's still decisive, but he comes across as more humbled by the whole experience. Let's listen to this clip and you'll see.
The thing I said to you back to the chateau, I had no right to say them.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I probably would have said the same thing under the circumstances. Feel guilty, hmm?
Maybe.
You know why?
Why?
Because you survived. Bettina, Coker, and all the rest dead. And you're alive, and you wonder why.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I know the feeling. During the war, you get a ship shot out from underneath you. All your friends gone, only a handful left. And you ask yourself, why me? Why not someone better?
All right, so back to the story. So Bill leaves the hospital and he walks to the train station in London to try and catch a train to his ship. So no trains are running, but this is where he meets Susan, who is a runaway from a boarding school. So that's a bit different from the novel. So Bill and Susan hop in a car and drive to Bill's ship, but they get stuck in the mud on a country road behind some crashed cars. So this is when they discover the Triffid threat, as a creeping, lurching Triffid emerges from the misty forest to try and make a meal of Susan. So see how this is different? They've taken a concept in the novel, like Bill in the novel, he worked with Triffid, so he knew they were a threat, but then you got to see glimpses of how they were a threat. They've kind of junked all that, and then in the movie here, they've said, well, we'll just create this one scene which kind of expresses that whole concept. And they did a good job. It was a good scene. It was actually a misty kind of forest thing, and the Triffids are there. It's pretty creepy. Worked out pretty well. So at the shipyard, so they finally make it to the shipyard, Bill accesses a radio transmitter, and he hears a distress call from a British ocean liner and distress calls from foreign countries as well. So the Japanese distress call is in Japanese, and the audience is shown images of burning buildings. So we know it's a distress call, but Bill doesn't see the images, but somehow he knows it's a distress call. But to be fair, I think it's because the next distress call they hear is in French, and Susan is able to translate it. Apparently she speaks French, so she knows it's a distress call. So I think you can assume the call before that was also a distress call. Right, so Bill and Susan, anyways, end up at a house with Mr. Coker and a handful of sighted people and lots of blind people. But things kind of fall apart pretty quickly. So they head out from there to Spain. I can't remember why. I think there's another naval base. And they head out with, so it's Susan and Bill and a woman called Christine, who's kind of like Bill's gal pal, or he wants her to be. So they're looking for an American naval base, and they end up on a ranch with Louise and Teresa, like a blind couple. Bill gets their radio working, and they learn that packs of Triffids are roaming the countryside and that there's a submarine scheduled to evacuate survivors on Saturday. So anyways, there's a big showdown at the end where Bill ends up creating a diversion by driving like this ice cream truck or something with this these megaphones on top to play music. And they're playing the music and the Triffids all start to follow him. And so he drives the truck out of the, out of the country house and into the, onto a country road. And then he abandons the truck and all the Triffids go after it. And then he meets up with everybody else who escaped when he created the diversion. He meets up with them at the submarine. So they all get to the submarine and everything's cool. So there's actually in the movie too, there's a separate storyline completely of Tom and his wife Karen, who are not in the novel. Well, Tom is a character in the novel, but he's never actually in it. It's just Bill talks about him because they used to work together at the Triffid Orchard. So anyways, Tom and his wife Karen, who's not in the novel, they live and work in a lighthouse on a small rocky island. They can both see, but they're stranded now that everyone is blind and there will be no more boats to bring them supplies. And they're also not safe from the Triffids. So shortly after the meteor shower, Tom has a battle with a Triffid. The Triffid moves really quickly, like a man. And Tom uses a harpoon to sword fight with the Triffid's tentacles. So, I mean, plants don't have muscles, right? So they're not moving that quickly. It just seems a little weird with the tentacles. He's having the sword fight with it. So anyways, while this is happening, Karen is just screaming helplessly because she's a woman in the 1960s. So Tom, the whole point to their storyline was that Tom labors for a way to destroy the Triffids. It comes to no avail, except at the very end when he accidentally discovers that Triffids completely disintegrate with salt water. It was like, it was like melting chalk under a stream of water. They just start disintegrating and there's smoke everywhere. It's really bizarre. I guess that was a point to that, to show the audience who needs like a happy ending that humanity has found a way to defeat the Triffids, and it's implied that going forward they would be able to organize and actually defeat the Triffids, even though they're currently the only two people who know about this live on a deserted rocky island lighthouse. But that's okay. So that was the 1962 film adaptation. It's pretty good. It's definitely not the same as the novel, though, and I wouldn't say to someone, yeah, you don't need to read the novel, you just watch the 1962 film adaptation. No, it's like a completely different thing. It's fun, but it's certainly not like the novel. Now, if you want one that's like the novel, so you have to write an essay for class, you don't want to read the novel, watch the 1981 BBC miniseries, which we're going to talk about now. So here's a plot summary for the miniseries. So Bill wakes up in a hospital bed with his eyes bandaged. It's 8 a.m. and the doctors haven't checked him, and this is the day that he is to have his bandages removed. He speaks into a recorder and tells us that his accident was the result. It's kind of like, it's sort of silly. He's talking into a voice recorder for like a journal or something, but it's basically just a device to tell the audience what happened. His accident was the result of a Triffid sting, and that it is the last straw, and that he's going to stop working on the Triffid farm. So Bill explains to the audience how Triffid farming came about, and it's in this cool flashback scene where there's these two ultra-capitalists in a room conniving with each other. One is actually smoking a cigar, and the other one is drinking a scotch. This is just to explain to the audience how this whole Triffid thing came to be, because it does seem a little weird. Why does he work on a farm where they're growing these carnivorous plants? But yeah, it's for capital. It's for the oil, for the profit. Bill can no longer wait. He's finished with his vocal journal entry, and he takes off his bandages and he wanders out of the hospital room to find everyone is blind and there are Triffids on the loose. So then he meets Josella, not like in the novel where she's being attacked, but I guess she was being attacked a little bit, but it's not as severe as in the novel. And then they make plans together to get out of the city. By the way, side note, there is a ton of smoking in this miniseries. Bill is like a chain smoker. So Josella and Bill meet Bleaker, and they're ready to join their community when Coker sets the fire and kidnaps Bill and Josella, and they are separated, just like in the novel, pretty much. So Bill is forced to lead a group of blind men and women over the next several days, and several of the group contract a lethal illness. It's kind of like typhoid. This is just like the novel, by the way. Most of the group dies, and then others just leave. The group just disbands. So Bill goes back to the university where Beaker's group was, and he runs back into Coker. And they leave London for Titchem and find a group there who are basically Christian fundamentalists. And then they leave to continue to look for Josella. Okay, so now, just like in the novel, Coker and Bill have a talk. Coker heads back to Titchem. I can't say that word. And Bill goes on to Sussex Downs looking for Josella. There's when he meets a little girl, Susan, and together they find Josella. So now it's 6 years later. They're still at Sussex Downs. Bill has just come back from London for the first time, and he says it's crumbling, it's too dangerous, he can't go back there because like buildings are collapsing at this point and stuff. Now, the Triffids are, at this point, surrounding their compound at Sussex, and it seems to be only a matter of time before the Triffids break through. So now we're shown Bill and Joe, Josella, on a little getaway on the beach. And this is weird. This wasn't sort of in the novel. Well, maybe it was, actually. I can't remember. But it didn't seem that important. But Bill and Josella, they kind of create a myth. So they're talking about, for their children, they're going to need stories. They're going to need like a myth. So they try and create a myth for the children. And then that's when Bill reveals that he thinks everyone was actually blinded purposely by the satellite weapons that emit a radiation. And that the plague, so that's another thing, that everyone seemed to die in the city suddenly, but it wasn't just by the Triffids. There seemed to be some sort of plague that's going on. I forgot to mention that's in the novel too. And he thinks the plague was caused by man also. So then shortly after that, Jack Coker arrives at Sussex Downs in a helicopter. So in the novel, there's a representative, but anyways, this time it's Jack Coker. So they've built a community on an island. Coker doesn't describe the organizational structure of the community, but he does say that they're not out to rebuild society as it was before the fall of civilization. Let's listen to what he says exactly.
One thing I should make clear, though, those of us over there have all agreed, we're not out to reconstruct the world as it was. We want to build something new, better. Well, some people don't agree with that. They want to keep a lot of the bad old features. If anybody doesn't like us or we don't like them, we ask them to move somewhere else.
Under the circumstances, somewhere else sounds like a pretty poor offer. Huh.
I don't mean we throw them back to the Triffids. One group did move to the Channel Islands, and I believe they're doing very well there, too. Anyway, the best way to learn about us is to come and find out for yourselves. I'm sure we will take to each other, but even if we don't, I think you'll find that the Channel Islands is a better place than this a few years from now.
Right, so the BBC miniseries here, obviously, staying true to the author's tendency for leftist thought. Anyway, what am I saying? I'm rambling on. But basically, yeah, they brought up the idea that the author expressed in the novel, which is that there are other ways to organize society, and sometimes they're a little better. So the next thing is, the next day, an armored vehicle arrives with two men that fancy themselves a part of a council that has some military authority to take over encampments and set up sighted feudal lords to rule over blind peasants. So basically the same thing as in a novel. And then the same thing happens. The Bill and the rest, they agree, but they're not really agreeing. And they get the men drunk, and then they trick them, and they let the Triffids in, and Triffids kill them all. And they get away, and they go back to Coker's colony, and I guess that's the end. So 1981 BBC miniseries, it's pretty good. I mean, definitely looks dated, but it's the truest to the novel. Like I say, if you were in a class and you were like, well, I just don't want to read the book, then you could watch this and get a pretty good sense of what went on. Now, kids out there, you should read the novel, because it is actually really good. It's a good read, and it's a fun read, but yeah, you could do that. This is a pretty close approximation of the novel. Next one, not a close approximation of the novel, which is the BBC miniseries from 2009. So this is now at the point where the big television and movie houses have decided, what really matters? What really matters is we get a whole bunch of action and CGI and silliness. That's what makes a good story. So we get enter BBC 2009 miniseries starring, who's it starring? Eddie Izzard is in it, amongst other people. Dougray Scott, I don't even know who that is. I know the name sort of. Jolie Richardson. Brian Cox is in it. He's great. Of course, he plays a character that doesn't even exist in the novel. But anyways, that's fine. Jason Priestley. I forgot Jason Priestley's in this. He plays Coker. So, I don't know, the miniseries, it's okay, but you definitely, I guess the thing I don't like about stuff like this is that they shouldn't even call it the Day of the Triffids, because it's just different. Like, it's more like, a BBC miniseries adaptation of John Wyndham's novel, The Day of the Triffids. I don't know why that's any different. No, they should just call it something else. It's not the Day of the Triffids. It's the day that giant plants with tentacles go after the general population. It's different. Anyways, I'll just get to it. I'm just rambling on. So here's my notes. Much of the story has changed in this version. Bill flashes back to his mother, who was killed by a Triffid. Didn't happen in the novel. She was a scientist researching the Triffids. Didn't happen in the novel. Triffids provide an oil that will replace fossil fuels, so that's good. So they're grown under high security. Yeah, it's sort of the same as the novel. Bill is stung by a Triffid when a protester breaks into a Triffid orchard where the oil company is gathering Triffid oil. So it didn't really happen like that in the novel, but that was pretty good. Like, the idea was that they had to show, how was Bill in the hospital? What happened? And so they're like, well, we'll have a protester come in who's fucking stuff up, and she causes Bill to get stung. So that's fine. So then the meteor shower happens while Bill is in the hospital bed. Everyone is blind. There's just great chaos everywhere. So a lot of the exposition in the novel is replaced with scenes, which is fine for like a miniseries or a movie. You got to do that, right? You can't have it all in there. So in the book, B- Bill thinks about how he will need to adjust his morality and not try to rescue those who need his help, because he can't really save them. Like in the novel, there's a lot of blind people. He could help a lot of people, but he just kind of ignores it. And he talks about this in the book, how you have to like change the way you think about things. Like the old morality's gone. You have to act differently. And they do a good job in the miniseries. It's a bit on the nose, but that's okay. I like on the nose. So they actually have a scene in the hospital. That's right. Bill runs into an old woman in a wheelchair. And the old woman's like, you know, help me, all this. And Bill, he says he'll go and he'll get some help and he'll come back or something. And what happens is he does go, but he doesn't go to get help anyways. He comes back and the old woman's just lying there. Her wheelchair's toppled over. She's lying on the ground and she looks dead. And so Bill goes over and he kind of closes her eyes. You know, how they do that in movies. They close people's eyelids, like, ooh, you're dead now, I'm going to close your eyelids. And I guess this is like, I don't know, this is closing the door on the old morality. It's not like that anymore, right? So something like that. Okay, so the movie also follows Eddie Izzard's character. So he's like a slimy opportunist. His journey is really selfish. So he's in a plane, and he's kind of asleep, and he's got his head turned to the right, away from the meteor shower when it happens, so he doesn't go blind. But when he's in the plane, he realizes, well, everyone's going blind, it's chaos, so he runs around grabbing all their flotation devices, and then he locks himself in the bathroom with a bunch of these flotation devices around him, so when the plane crashes, he doesn't get killed, which is ridiculous, but you get the idea. I mean, it's more metaphorical, right? So basically it's metaphorical. Like, this act shows that he is watching out for himself. He's not worried about anybody else. It's actually pretty well done when he's taking all their flotation devices. They're all sitting in their chairs blind, just looking ahead. And he has no problem going up right between each of their legs, grabbing the flotation devices. They don't know what's happening. He doesn't care. It's not even a concern for him. It just shows the level of selfishness. So it's sort of a good scene, but it's definitely more metaphorical, because like, I don't care how many flotation devices he has in the bathroom. If the plane crashes, he's going to die anyways. Okay. Right. And when he left the plane, he cheered in exultation. Like, the plane just crashed and all these people died and there's chaos outside. And he walks out of the plane and he like shoves his hand in the air and he's like, yeah. Like, I made it. Okay, so in this, Bill meets Josella when he rescues her from a police officer. So the police officer's blind. In the book, he wasn't a police officer, he's just some blind guy. But in this, he's a police officer. So nice little commentary on the police there. So what else happens? Eddie steals shit from a store. Like, he steals a nice suit that he thinks is cool, because he's a big man now. He's like, he's let loose in the world. He can do whatever he wants. Another thing that happens is the protester at the orchard who caused Bill to get stung. He's in a little prison cell in the orchard, but now the power's all off. No, the power wasn't off yet. He gets out of his cell somehow, but then he goes over to this device and he turns off the power at the orchard. That's right, because he's walking around. The cell was dark, I guess, so he didn't get blinded. But when he got out of his cell, everyone's blind. So he walks over and he pulls down this giant power switch, turns off all the power for the orchard, because conveniently they have that giant power switch right there that people could just turn off. So that happens. And what that does is that lets out all the Triffids, right? So the Triffids in this are much more deadly than in the novel, in a way. In this, like, they walk around just like in the novel, but they also, in this, they're more like people. They're more like giant tentacled people running around and chasing after humans and trying to eat them. So yeah. Okay. So then later on, Josella and Bill arrive at the orchard. Bill's friend Lucy from the orchard is dead, along with the protester who's dead, and everyone else is dead, and the Triffids have all escaped. So now they visit Josella's dad, and he's dead. Now Bill and Joe make an announcement from the BBC office warning people of the threat of the Triffids. Oh, forgot to mention, Josella is not... She was a novelist in the novel, but she that was in the past, and she did other stuff. Anyways, but in this, she's like a BBC radio host or something, okay? So they make an announcement, a general announcement to the anybody who might be alive and listening, warning people of the threat of the Triffids. Now, I don't know why they didn't say, hey, as well, for anybody listening who may be sighted or unsighted, whatever, make your way to X location so we can build a new life and a new community and we can all work together. They didn't say that. They just said, hey, watch out for these Triffids. They're eating people. Thanks. So meanwhile, Eddie Izzard is walking around. He's still walking around all cocky. He's got a nice new like silver suit on. He looks like a mobster. And he decides, I'm going to go into the prime minister's residence. And he asks Helga, who's a servant there. She's blind. He says, I'd like to see the prime minister. And then he tells Helga that he's going to take over. And he's running the show now. He's running the country. So, I don't know. Like, what? Okay. This is not in the novel, needless to say. Like, Eddie Izzard doesn't exist in the novel. So, like, what are they doing now? Like, why are you turning this into just some silly action movie? Like, it's just, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, this is the kind of thing where they should not be calling this the Day of the Triffids. They just come up with a different name. Just say, like, BBC's messed up adaptation of the Day of the Triffids or something. Just don't just call it the Day of the Triffids. Because the thing is, I think a lot of people, more than you realize, like, watch stuff and take it as historical fact. So, for instance, people watch historical movies and they think, oh, that's how history unfolded. That's what happened, like, if it's a historical movie. But the same applies to other stuff, like adaptations like this. So there's a novel that's written, Day of the Triffids, and then someone makes an adaptation of it. I think people watch it and they're like, oh, that's what the novel's about? This is not what the novel's about at all. This is just some bizarre BBC story. It's kind of terrible. So, all right. So Eddie Izzard's going to run the country. So another thing to note is Bill is really cold with Josella. He's kind of a cold guy. He's not really... Anyways. Coker joins up with Torrance, which is Eddie Izzard. Other stuff happens. Basically, Eddie becomes like the leader. He really does become prime minister, sort of. I mean, he becomes a leader and other people come and start working with him. And he kind of becomes like a mob boss. Like, he's sending people to do stuff. And yeah, he's in charge. He's a powerful man. And eventually at the end, he goes after Bill. And well, more specifically, he's really going after Josella because she kind of double crosses him. And Bill and Josella end up tricking Eddie Izzard into getting eaten by the Triffids. I don't know. It's just, you know what? It's just an action movie. It's not Day of the Triffids anymore. So needless to say, I wasn't in love with this interpretation of it. It was okay as action movies go. I mean, I give it like a 4 out of 10 or something. Definitely not my style. You could skip it. Okay. So Day of the Triffids, inspiration for other movies. One that was mentioned, I'm sure there are lots, but one specifically that was mentioned that was inspired by Day of the Triffids was Danny Boyle's 2002 British post-apocalyptic horror film written by Alex Garland, starring Cillian Murphy, 28 Days Later. This was apparently Alex Garland, who was the writer of the screenplay, did indicate that Day of the Triffids was a big influence on the screenplay. And you can see that when you watch towards the beginning, Bill kind of wakes... No, not Bill, I'm sorry. Jim, the character, wakes up in a hospital, just like Bill did in Day of the Triffids, and no one's around, and he doesn't know what's going on, and he goes outside, and there's a bit of chaos, but there's not a lot of people around. It's pretty empty, and he's just trying to figure stuff out. That is exactly like Day of the Triffids. Like, not exactly like it, but I mean, like, you can see how he was definitely inspired by Day of the Triffids. So how do I feel about 28 Days Later? It was pretty good. It's not really my type of movie, but I liked it. So let's do a little plot summary. We'll talk a little bit about it. I have some mixed feelings about the about some things about it. Anyways, let's go through the plot. So at the beginning, 28 Days Later, we're in a, it says Primate Research Center. So some activists break into a primate research center where monkeys are being forced to watch videos of violent protests and police brutality a la Clockwork Orange. So activists break in and they free the monkeys that are infected with a, quote, rage virus that makes them aggressive and homicidal. A monkey attacks a female protester and it, like, vomits blood on her. And then that's kind of, the blood is like, it's implying that she's been infected now with whatever virus there was. The reason they know it's a virus is because a scientist came in and was like, wait, don't let them out of the cages. They're all infected with this rage virus. So then we get the on screen that says 28 days later. And then a man wakes up in a hospital bed naked and alone. So it's Cillian Murphy. His name's Jim in the movie. So he wanders down the hall and he can't find anyone. Well, he puts on hospital garment first. He wanders down the hall. He can't find anyone. He gorges on a Pepsi from a broken pop machine, not just a Pepsi, a bunch of pops and a bunch of chocolate bars and stuff. So it kind of gives you the sense that he hasn't eaten in a while. So there must have been some chaos going on. So he's now walking in London outside. So this is one thing about this movie. I noticed Danny Boyle does a lot of, like, jump from scene to scene, and there's not a lot of segue between the scenes. He just kind of, like, he's in the hospital, he's gorging on pop and stuff, and then suddenly he's walking outside in London. It's vacant. There's he's letting the audience figure out that, okay, this is the next thing that happened that's important. This is the next thing that happened. Not a lot of transitions, which I actually liked. It actually cuts out a lot of the junk you don't really need that you could have in a novel that you don't really need in a movie. Anyways, so he's walking in London. He's alone. There's no one to be found. It's silent and it's still, but there are signs that things were violent. Like, for instance, there's broken windows. There's some overturned cars. And then he sees a newspaper headline that says London was evacuated and that the world is in chaos. Okay, so he enters a church and there seems to be lots of dead bodies. But he says, for some reason, he just says, hello. And several of the bodies get up and they look back at him and then they just start running after him. They're chasing him. And then so he runs outside and he's running down the road and these crazy things are chasing him. And suddenly someone throws these, like, Molotov cocktails and hits the guys chasing him. And they burn up, but they're still running after him. Anyways, and then he gets rescued by these two people. And the scene kind of implies that the two people that rescue him have been doing this for a while. They know what they're doing. They know how to get rid of these crazy things that are chasing him. And so they explain to him what's going on, how to survive, what's happened, just in basic terms. Like, you know, everything's chaos. There's this infection. It's causing everyone to be, like, raged out, and it's transferred with blood and all this. And we learn that Jim, the main character, he's a bike courier, and the two people that rescue him are Mark and Serena. Sorry, Selena. So they give him the rules for surviving, like, you don't get infected and stuff like that. So the next day they visit Jim's home and his parents are dead. So that was, you know, Jim can then say goodbye to his past, right? So soon after that point, Mark actually gets infected when a couple of the infected people attack them. And Selena doesn't hesitate. She brutally murders Mark. And I guess that drives home that this is serious. You can't allow anyone to get in the way of your survival. Okay, so Jim and Selena now on their own. So they see some flashing Christmas lights in an apartment building nearby. And then when they go to investigate, they meet Frank and Hannah. Frank is the father, Hannah's the daughter, and they're locked up in the apartment there, surviving. So the four of them, they realize like they're not going to survive if they stay there, because the things that are infected are going to keep coming. They're going to run out of food and water. So what they do is the four of them drive out of the city, and they go in search of a military post. I guess the military post has been broadcasting that for people, come here, we're going to save you and all this sort of stuff. But when they arrive there, there's like 10 or 12 guys. That's it. And the father, Frank, gets actually shot. He gets infected and then he gets shot by the military guys. So now it's just Hannah and Jim and Selena and all these military guys. But shortly after being at the military post, the guys are kind of like young and a bit Mickey Mouse, and the guys running around, it's like a bunch of bros running around with guns. And the leader tells Jim, yeah, you know what, we were actually broadcasting because the guys wanted women, and we thought that was probably the best way to do it. So when Jim hears this, he's like, we got to get out of here. He immediately leaves the room. He goes to get Selena and Hannah and get them out of there. But one of the military guys smacks Jim in the face with his gun, and they stop the girls, and they kind of have them kidnapped at this point. And then so they go to take Jim outside to execute him with another guy, another military guy who doesn't like what they're doing. And Jim actually escapes, and he gets over some wall. So now he's out there with all the crazy infected people in the forest or whatever. And the military guys are just there. But so Jim kind of comes back, and he kind of stages this big assault on the military guys. Like, he takes them out one by one. He kills a few of them. He unleashes some of the infected people and uses them to his advantage to kill the military guys. Anyways, he does this in an attempt to rescue Selena and Hannah, and he is successful in rescuing them. And at the end of the movie, so they're driving in their taxi that they came in on, and they break through the fence, and it's like a freeze frame. And then it shows them, it's supposed to be like weeks or months later, like in a country house somewhere, and they're unraveling this huge banner outside that says hello for this jet that is occasionally passes over top. So obviously somewhere there's some military that still exists, whether it's another part of the world or something, and they're looking for survivors. So they unravel this huge banner that says basically hello, and it's so that they can get rescued. And that's it. That's the end of the movie. So it was pretty good. I liked it. It's not really my style of movie. I mean, it's more like a horror action, you know, that sort of thing. I like the Day of the Triffids is a bit slower. And what do they call it? Someone called it. Yeah, here's where it is. So apparently this guy, Brian Aldiss. It says from Wikipedia, another British science fiction writer despairingly labeled some of them cozy catastrophes, especially Day of the Triffids. So that's pretty true. It is kind of like that. Like it's a catastrophe, but it's sort of like, this is exciting. What chance for a new life? He meets a beautiful blonde woman, and she's like, yeah, I want to be with you, and let's have babies and all this. So it is kind of a cozy catastrophe. I know a lot of people get killed, and there's some peril, but 28 Days Later is not like that. It's from the get-go, it's constant. They're in peril all the time, and the people who are infected and who are after them are deadly and very fast. They're like animals. They're unrelenting, and they're scary. And when people get infected themselves, there's lots of blood and like bludgeoning and just awful murders. And so it's not a cozy catastrophe. Couple of things about 28 Days Later. It's not, like I say, it's not totally my type of movie. I prefer this cozy catastrophe type of thing. I also had, I wasn't totally comfortable with the whole infection. Like, there's this infection that people get, and it's, what did they call it? The rage. They're infected with rage? Like, what the hell does that mean? And is this like an infection where it turns you into a homicidal person? Like, their eyes go all red, and they go and they try and kill other people, and they like puke blood on them? It just seems a bit far-fetched. Also, the people who are infected, they don't go after other infected people. They only go after the uninfected, which seems a bit weird too. I mean, you kind of have to turn yourself into a pretzel to justify the logic behind it. You could say like, well, the infection, it's like the gene or whatever, the virus, whatever it is, it's programmed to say, look, we want to spread as far as we can. So it recognizes when other people are infected, and it doesn't try and infect them. It tries to infect people who are uninfected. So that's why they don't go after other infected people. But you're turning yourself into a pretzel to try and justify this thing. I don't know. I'm sure other people who have commented on this have made some smarter comments, and this is just my offhand reaction to seeing the movie last night, so I haven't thought about it too deeply, but that sort of didn't sit well with me, the whole infection kind of thing. It seemed a bit silly. But I guess you have to suspend your disbelief to allow the premise of the movie to work for you. So, but it was a good film. I enjoyed it. I was pleasantly surprised, because going into it, I was like, I don't even think I really want to watch it. I might just watch the beginning scene with the hospital and see if it does seem like Day of the Triffids. But when I was watching, I was like, yeah, I'm going to see this thing through it. It looks pretty good. So I'd recommend that if that's your type of movie. But read the novel, Day of the Triffids, John Wyndham, 1951. Definitely worth it. I would say it's top notch. It's highly readable. Thank you for listening today. Check out the show notes for this episode or any episode on my website at ptpod.xyz. The show notes contain the links to all my sources and products that were referenced in the episode. You can write a glowing review of my podcast on iTunes or Google Play. There are handy dandy links in the menu on my website at ptpod.xyz. And you can support me on Patreon at patreon.com/ptpod. The intro music for today's episode was Sweeter Vermouth, courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Check out the link in the show notes. Thank you.